cause number 1323-500CV, South Texas Independent School District versus Ryan Boosie, Josh Klosterman, Russell Klosterman, Lane Klosterman, Mitch Thomas, Olivia Rincones, Robert Rincones, Ruben Rincones, Enrica Rincones, Angelita Garcia, Adelaida Garcia, Aniceto Garcia, Betty Garcia, Rayleigh Rincones, Gary Boosie, Allison Savage, and Lyford Consolidated Independent School District.
Thank you, Your Honor. Madam Chief Justice, and may it please the court. My name is Parth Gagey, and I represent appellant South Texas ISD, which has two schools right here in Edinburgh, as well as several others in Mercedes, Olmedo, and San Benito, Texas. These schools serve three counties and have won national recognition. We appreciate the opportunity to argue here today because this appeal is vitally important to South Texas ISD. Appellees are trying to take away more than $30 million in annual funding from an ad valorem tax that has been collected by South Texas ISD since 1967. This amount represents nearly a half of the district's funding.
The $30 million that you suggest, that is derivative of all three counties, just not Willacy County. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Do you have a number for how much is derivative just out of the Lyford Independent School District?
Your Honor, I believe that at the hearing, the number $750,000 was mentioned, but I'll have to go back and verify that. But it's a small portion of the $30 million in funding.
So then why is the argument being made that $30 million is at issue here?
Because, Your Honor, the taxpayer standing arguments being made by these individual appellees would apply not just to taxpayers living in Willacy, but presumably to taxpayers living in the other two counties. And so what they are saying,
they'll follow suit is what you're saying. The other taxpayers may follow suit depending on the outcome.
Correct, Your Honor.
Well, however, the argument made by the Lyford Independent School District based upon their tax rolls and their limited funding will be different from every other school district in whether it's Cameron, Willacy, Cameron or Hidalgo, wouldn't it?
Your Honor, that's correct, but let me start there since you asked about the Lyford ISD standing. Essentially, Lyford ISD doesn't have standing because it cannot meet any of the three elements of the standing analysis. They can't show particularized injury, they cannot show traceability or a causal connection, or redressability. And that's based on a series of admissions made by the Lyford superintendent at the hearing. The first admission was about injury. The Lyford superintendent conceded that Lyford can issue its own bonds once they're approved by election and can also raise its own tax rate once it's approved by election, and South Texas ISD cannot stop it. In fact, Lyford ISD superintendent conceded that Lyford ISD, quote, can do whatever they want to do regardless of what South Texas does. And that's on page 33 of the reporter's record. Next, there's no traceability because another concession made was that Lyford's board, not South Texas ISD, is the one that decides the Lyford tax rate. And so what that means is that Lyford's injury is not fairly traceable to the conduct of South Texas ISD, but rather is the result of independent action by a third party that is not before the court, that third party being the board of directors of Lyford ISD. And finally, there's no redressability because another concession at the hearing was that South Texas ad valorem tax has no impact on the Lyford ad valorem tax. And in fact, the Lyford superintendent essentially conceded that the reason they don't raise their own tax rate is because of a, quote, political obstacle, not a legal obstacle. And that's on page 46 of the reporter's record. And so Lyford ISD has no standing in this case. I think the more central question is whether the individual appellees have standing, and I'd like to turn to that next. The individual.
Let me ask you this question. I think that if I understand your argument correctly, you are saying that the 1974 order for special election, and I'm quoting this, did not specifically limit the use of funds to special education. Is that correct?
Your Honor, that's exactly correct.
Okay, but if we disagree with you on that issue, then what other issues or avenues do you have that these taxpayers do not have a cause of action or do not have standing?
Your Honor, that gets to our two alternative arguments about the political question doctrine and the sovereign immunity issue. But I'd like to go through, Your Honor, the provisions that are at issue in this case to show you why there is no taxpayer standing for the individual taxpayers.
But don't forget to answer my question.
Yes, Your Honor. Taxpayers generally do not have standing just on the basis of being taxpayers. And that's what all the individual appellees are claiming in this lawsuit. And there's a very good reason for this rationale. Governments cannot operate if every citizen who concludes that a public official has abused his discretion is granted the right to come into court and bring the public official's actions under judicial review. And that's why the Texas Supreme Court has repeatedly said that when taxpayers have standing on the basis of being a taxpayer, it's a limited exception. Such lawsuits are drastic, and plaintiffs who want to benefit from this exception have to bring themselves strictly within its confines.
But that's not what they're arguing here.
Your Honor,
that's not what they're basing their standing on.
The individual appellees are basing their standing on taxpayer standing.
Yes, taxpayer standing, but based on the exception to it, that is, albeit a small exception, is that these funds that are being collected are being collected illegally or unauthorized.
Your Honor, that is their argument. But the reason that they cannot properly allege it is because they have no basis for that illegality. And let me give you two examples from Texas Supreme Court cases to just frame the discussion. In Williams v. Lara, for example, the taxpayer was determined to have standing because funds were being expended on the chaplain's education unit, and there's a clear prohibition in the Establishment Clause against such spending. Or in Jones versus Turner from the Texas Supreme Court in 2022, the city charter had a requirement that ad valorem tax dollars shall, quote, shall be used exclusively, end quote, for drainage and street costs. And so the taxpayers had standing to say, well, this expenditure violates that prohibition.
Sure.
There's nothing like that.
Well, here they're arguing that the purpose initially was for the rehabilitation of handicapped persons. And yes, it was expanded a little bit later, but that was still the purpose that the voters elected back in 74.
Your Honor, I'd like to push back on that, and I'd like you to flip to tab 4 on my bench exhibits. This is the special election order. And you can see this is the order for election. It says the purposes of the said rehabilitation district. You know, first it says it's to construct and build residences for the training of handicapped trainees. But the important point here, Your Honor, is it doesn't have a prohibition saying, and non-special education students shall never be educated by this district. And the reason I bring that up, Your Honor, is because their leading case on this contract with the voters doctrine, which I might add is an obscure doctrine that's only been quoted a few times, is the San Saba case, Texas Supreme Court, 1937. And I'd like to walk you through San Saba and tell you why it doesn't apply.
Let me stop you there.
Yes,
Are you then saying that the special order of 1974 does not restrict these funds only to be used for rehabilitation children, but for everything?
Your Honor, that's exactly what I'm saying.
Where do you get that from this order?
There are two ways I get that from this order. First, look at the taxing power. The purposes are enumerated in listed order, and I've highlighted the taxing power. It's a different purpose, and to have the power to annually levy ad valorem taxes. In that clause, there's no modification that says, and these tax dollars will only be used for special education purposes. But, Your Honor,
why would we need to add? I mean, I understand why you want to add the language, but if it's not there, it's not there.
Because,
and why am I assuming that language needs to be added to that statute?
Because, Your Honor, the contract with the voters doctrine functions on express words. That's the whole point of San Saba. And
right.
For example, in San Saba, the two vital conditions which were allegedly violated were as follows. First, the vital condition was no bond shall ever be issued, end quote. That's specific language from San Saba. The second vital condition was that there would be a right to repeal the tax. So when the legislature came a few years later and issued a piece of legislation that allowed for bonds and took away that right to repeal, now you have a violation of the contract with the voters because you had express words saying you can't do that, and the legislature tried to do that. In this case, you don't have that. But, Your Honor, even more importantly, besides that taxing power, look a little bit just below in that 1974 special election order. It says, all as authorized and provided for in House Bill 167, passed at the regular session. It's basically referring to former Chapter 26, which has continuing validity. That's our enabling statute.
Where are we reading? I've lost you.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I'm still on tab 4, that special election order.
Okay.
And
well,
I'm at the very bottom that says, authorized and provided for in House Bill 167, passed at the regular session of the 58th legislature, 1963, which became effective on May 7th, 1963, as amended and as brought forward in the Education Code, Chapter 26 of the Texas Causes of Action. Now, if you turn to tab three, this is, I think, a clear reason.
Okay, so let me just see if I understand your argument correctly. You are stating that in the election that was held in Willacy County in 1974, did not limit under the voters' doctrine the funding only to handicapped children or disabled children, but could be inclusive of what the 1983 amendment agreed.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. And okay. I'd like to make 2 points on that. You just saw that it incorporated by reference Chapter 26. I want to show you provision at tab 3 from that Chapter 26.
Okay, before we go to tab 3, let me ask you a follow-up question on that, because I will forget to ask you this question. If hypothetically we do not believe this statute encompasses the language that was eventually led in 1983, then wouldn't this be a violation of the voters' doctrine?
Your Honor, for a violation of the voters' doctrine, you need a clear prohibition. And that was our entire point in the briefing.
So is the question no or yes? So if we do not, if hypothetically, I'm not saying that that's it, this does not include the 1983, does this violate the voters' doctrine?
No, Your Honor, because there's no prohibition, and that's what illegality requires. And not only is there no prohibition, there's authorization. And I'm saying that based on the language of the statute in 1969. Look at tab 3.
Okay. Even though it goes beyond the purpose that was contemplated at the time.
Your Honor, I would push back on that. We haven't changed our purpose. We have expanded the student body, so we're educating handicapped and non-handicapped scholastics. But non-handicapped scholastics also has a particular definition, and what we're providing is vocational training, which is within our purpose from the beginning. It's not as though our purpose of providing this kind of education has changed. It's only the size of the student body. And if you look at tab...
But...
I would push back on that just because over
the years...
We're going
to push back on you.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, South Texas ISD is well known for its, you know, curriculum. It's an exemplary school district. There's no doubt about that. And it's very competitive. I think that the whole nature of it is completely different from what it started as.
But
this rehabilitation...
Let's be absolutely clear about this. This is not a contravention of purpose. You know, this is not a kind of bond election where you approve funds for State Highway 4 and then you use those funds for State Highway 6, for example. We're still educating special education students and non-special education students. So it's an expansion rather than contravention.
But it's a small minority of your student body, the special education.
Your Honor, students. I believe the
But if you take the highway and you have funding for Highway 4, and you say, okay, but Highway 4 goes into Highway 6, so now we're going to also use it into Highway 6. You're still not using it for Highway 4. You're not using it also for Highway 6.
I think what we're getting into is it depends on what the contract of the voters said. And in opposition to your example, I'd cite you to the Barrington case, where they found no violation of the contract of the voters doctrine because the bond proposition was broad. And that meant that the municipality could spend bond proceeds on items that weren't specifically listed because what was originally passed by the voters was broad. And that's the point I'm trying to get at with tab three. Tab three shows you in 1969, one of the statutory provisions. So when this vote happened in 1974, and when that vote happened in 1974, the voters knew that this piece of legislation existed, this provision existed in law. And what it says is all powers relating to taxation vested by law in independent school districts shall be applicable to any rehabilitation district. So when the voters voted for this district in 1974, they knew Chapter 26 was incorporated by reference. They knew this was one of the provisions. And surely, to have all powers relating to taxation, just like any other independent school district, includes the power to spend those tax dollars on special education students and non-special education students. And along similar lines, let me get to tab one.
But before, I do have one question before you run out of your time.
Yes, sir.
Is the passage of time here, we're talking 50 years since this vote took place. How does that factor into our analysis?
Your Honor, I think there's an independent basis for denying taxpayer standing. And it's articulated by the Bland case from the Texas Supreme Court, which stood for the proposition that this limited exception loses its justification when the lawsuit becomes too disruptive. In that case, the school district had already built the school building and it was just paying back the loan for the school building. And the Texas Supreme Court said, in those kinds of cases, we're not going to afford taxpayer standing because that would impair the entire operation of the school district. I think that goes along the lines of what you're talking about, Your Honor. We've been in existence for 50 years. We're actually paying back some construction bonds right now. And to enjoin us from having this taxing authority would essentially mean the disruption, complete disruption of the school district. And this exception is not supposed to be that wide.
Okay, I have two follow-up questions and I know he's out of time. But
that's okay.
We'll but, it's, but I'm the judge, so I get to do this. One is, one question is, and it goes back to the numbers that we started. You know, your briefing and your argument has always been 30 million, but what you really would only lose is 750. I know that you're making the argument that others would follow, but I'm only here on this case. So you would only lose the 750,000.
Your Honor, I don't think we can concede that at this point based on the broad allegations in the plaintiff's original petition. If you look at the relief requested, they're asking for an injunction against the collection and expenditure of the entire tax. At no point in those pleadings did they say against the only $750,000 for Willacy County.
Yeah, but I don't know that Willacy County can speak on behalf of Hidalgo County and or Cameron County or any of the other school districts. With that being said, let's move on to the second question because you're out of time. Your argument is that you won't be able to collect in the ad valorem taxes, but the school district argues that the state will step in and cover any shortfall of the funding under this public school finance is what they argue. Do you agree that there is a mechanism in place in the state of Texas to make up for whatever shortfall funding you get?
No, Your Honor. Okay. And I'm glad you asked this question because it bears some clarification. There's something called Tier 1 funding that's guaranteed by the state and Tier 2 funding. Tier 2 funding is based on your own tax collection efforts, and that would not be guaranteed by the state. And keep in mind that we're limited only to 5 cents on every $100 of valuation, which is much less than the ordinary school district, which usually has a dollar out of every $100 of valuation for maintenance and operation tax, and then 8 to 12 cents for interest and sinking fund. And so we don't agree that if we lose this ad valorem tax, we'd be guaranteed entire funding for Tier 2 as well by the state of Texas.
Okay, thank you for answering.
Thank you,
Chief, for allowing me the extra questions.
Good morning. Ms. Leon.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Sarah Leon here on behalf of the appellees. And may it please the court, I think that the appellant's arguments are fatally flawed beginning on the very first page of their brief. The premise is that the power to tax the citizens of Willacy County flows from the legislature, not the voter. That is a flawed initial premise, and it underscores their entire argument. The appellant compounds that error when it argues that former Chapter 26 of the Texas Education Code authorizes it to provide a general education program for non-disabled youth. The plain language of Chapter 26, as it was amended in 1975 and again in 1983, limits the authority of a rehabilitation district to serve non-disabled children and youth to those children who are too old to attend a regular school or who are needing an alternative school setting because they cannot function in the general curriculum, a general school setting. So that is the limited statutory authority under which South Texas ISD initially obtained voter approval to operate. And it's the same approval that exists as of this date.
So when that amendment was made and it used the word alternative, I recall when my kids were in school, there was the kids that were sent to an alternative school were generally the kids that were disruptive, were having trouble keeping up for various reasons and needed different type of attention. Is that what was the intent then?
The alternative school that you're referencing, Chief, is arises under Chapter 37 of the Education Code, which came into effect in about 1995. The alternative school that is referenced in the 1979 and 1983 versions of former Chapter 26 refers specifically to children who lack the ability to function in a regular school program, whether by disability or behavior or by age, that they've aged out of the regular educational program. Those are defined terms in Chapter 26, and you can find those defined terms at 26.001 of the former Chapter 26.
Okay, so then your argument is that it was still a restricted population of students that were going to be attending this program.
And is to this day.
And yet 50 years have passed that since then, and obviously South Texas ISD has changed.
Yes.
Drastically within that time frame. Same question for you is, what do we do with that? The fact that they have operated and without complaint by, you know, Lyford or ISD or any other taxpayers during that time.
The fact of whether anyone has complained or not complained, I think, is outside the scope of the case before this court. We are challenging the August 22nd, 2023 act of the South Texas ISD Board of Trustees setting a maintenance tax. So we're not seeking remedies for past taxes.
But the passage of time is irrelevant, is what you're saying, because we're focusing on just this one act at this point in time.
That is correct.
It's kind of like I can't go back and complain about my past tax and property taxes. I can only complain about my current one.
That is exactly the case. That is exactly the case. And council makes the point that it's a very small tax, right, that it's only 4.92 cents. In the record, you will see testimony that this issue first came to light when Lyford CISD first went to its voters to talk about passing a bond. And at that time, the voters asked the question, why are we paying two school taxes? This was in 2022, and that's what began the inquiry that has resulted in this litigation. After locating the initial authority for collecting the tax, it became apparent that the scope of South Texas ISD's current activities far exceed what was authorized by the voters back in 1974.
So where do your taxpayers get their individual standing to be before this court?
It's an exception to the taxpayer standing rule that if the governmental and the taxing authority is collecting an illegal tax, that any taxpayer has standing.
And where do we derive the illegal taxing if it has been? I mean, how do we get to the illegal standing? I mean, we have the statute, we have the bond. How do we get to an illegal taxing?
I would start with Article 7, Section 3 of the Texas Constitution. That is the only way a school district can be formed under the Constitution of Texas. And it provides that the legislature can authorize the existence of the school and that the school can collect taxes subject to approval by the voters. South Texas ISD never went to a Article 7, Section 3 vote. It's the vote from 1974 expressly incorporates former Chapter 26, which is a limited purpose statute. And again, it only authorizes the operation of a rehabilitation district. There are a number of school districts in the state of Texas that do not have Article 7 taxing authorities. And those would include school districts that operate in our military bases, the Wyndham School District that operates in the juvenile justice system, and charter schools. And all of those schools are funded through the Foundation School Program, just as South Texas ISD is funded. So South Texas ISD, under House Bill 1, the State Appropriations Act, is entitled to recover through local taxation and through state funding, only as much money, or it's entitled to be reimbursed for the same amount of money that other school districts in Cameron County earn. What they're asking the court to approve today is additional enrichment beyond that which any other school district in the state receives.
They are the only, I was gonna ask you that question because I thought I read that. They're the only school district of this type in the entire state?
They are the only rehabilitation, it is the only rehabilitation district in the state. It is the only district that collects duplicative taxes over a taxing other school districts. And it's the only school district in the state that is not subject to recapture under Chapter 49, which applies to all of the other Article 7 school taxes.
And why is that important for our ability to analyze this case? I mean, if that is true, where does that come into our play?
I think in the it's shown in the bench brief where the portions of the ballot language that refer to a rehabilitation district are simply not highlighted, so we're not supposed to look at those. And if you read the ballot language without the limiting language for the rehabilitation district in reference to Chapter 26, I believe their argument is, well, it's really an Article 7 tax. But I think that the facts are different. I think that the limited purpose for which it was authorized show that it's acting outside of the school funding formula for everyone else. And that, you know, the fact that it's not subject to recapture is additional evidence to that effect.
So if we get all the way to the end, of as we've discussed here today, how do we distinguish this case from the Bland Independent School District as to the disruption?
I think that's really easy.
Well, I'm glad you do, Ms.
Yes. So in the bench brief, you have one selected page from the 200-page annual audit, which is Plaintiff's Exhibit 1 in the record, Volume 3 of the clerk's record. And I think their argument that they have obligations to pay is disingenuous. First of all, if you read the bench exhibit, it specifically references that the bond in question is secured by lease revenues, and that the bond is actually owned by a public facilities corporation, not South Texas ISD, but a public facilities corporation, which is a separate legal entity. If they had included a couple more pages of the audit, you would also see that in 2022, the district had $103 million of excess revenue or fund balance, that's money that's not needed for current school purposes, that could have satisfied the $6 million debt. And in 2022, there were 2 years of that debt remaining. So we're in 2024 now. So I think that is a red herring.
Okay, so I'm going to just be honest. I've lost you.
Okay.
How does that distinguish it, though,
okay,
from the Bland case? Because, I mean, the whole thing is the disruption, right? Are we going, if we unfund the school district of South Texas Independent School, it's going to cause a disruption. And that's, you know, Bland says you can't do that.
So Bland was a little bit more limited than that. In Bland, it was also a public facilities corporation question.
Right. They had entered into a contract for some buildings and were in the process of doing the payment of that.
And had built the buildings. They had built the buildings. They had entered into a public facilities corporation lease agreement. And so effectively, if the underlying lease would be permitted to be struck, then there would be no funds to operate the Public Facilities Corporation. Here, there's no facts at all like that. $6 million 2 years ago was a pittance in terms of South Texas ISD's overall budget. And House Bill 1, which is the state appropriations, says that should South Texas ISD lose funding, the state will make that up to and limited to what other districts in Cameron County are funded at. So it receives the same funding as every charter school in the state, the school districts that operate on military bases and federal parks. It would be on a level playing field with the other school districts in the state. Minutes left.
Yes.
If the court finds, as we assert it should, that the South Texas ISD is not authorized to levy a 5-cent tax on the voter, on the taxpayers of Willacy County, then I think the arguments as to standing resolve themselves. So in other words, Lyford CISD has put evidence in the record that there is financial harm to Lyford CISD by having its citizens subjected to duplicative school tax. Dr. DeWitt testified that the 5-cent tax has a real and tangible impact on the district's ability to access additional funding for the district either through a higher INS rate or through additional local revenue for maintenance and operations.
Well, but they're in the same position as every other. I mean, Lyford can still raise its taxes. It's not limited in any ability by what South Texas Independent School District does. So why are we going to hold them in a different position?
If the taxpayers of Lyford CISD were not being charged an unlawful 5-cent tax, it would be politically and ethically easier to raise that tax rate. But these taxpayers are being taxed twice for education services. And it would be one thing if South Texas ISD had obtained voter authority for that tax, but in this case they did not.
But they're still providing rehabilitation services. So they're still meeting, I like that look, Ms. Liddell. They're still meeting, they say that at least 3%, if I read the testimony correct, is being provided for rehabilitation services students.
If you examine the excerpt in the bench brief or the bench documents from chapter 26, and I can't recall if it's 6-7, but 0.67, the very last bullet, the last section says that none of the activities of South Texas ISD or of a rehabilitation district, of which there is only one, can impact the provision of special services to disabled children. And I think the record is clear that any services to disabled children that are provided by South Texas ISD are de minimis. The superintendent testified that they only offer a half-day program when we all understand that disabled children are entitled to
a full
school day.
I know that it may be not what we all want, and it's definitely, I think we'll all agree that it provides more than, but it's still providing services to disability children, of which Willacy County and the citizens of Lyford can, if they have disability children in their school district, partake in.
I think the whole premise of South Texas ISD was superseded with the 1975 passage of the Education of Handicapped Children Act. And the language of the ballot and the language of the Rehabilitation District statute is outdated, just as the notion that South Texas ISD is somehow providing special services for disabled children is outdated. They're providing those services only to the same extent as every other school district in the state.
Does the statute of 1975 now, I'm trying to find the right word, now require independent school district to provide care for disabled children? I mean, before then, my understanding was they didn't, and after the 1974 passage, every school district is to provide services for disability children.
That's absolutely correct. And those services must be provided at the home school in the least restrictive environment. So it would actually be unlawful to have a segregated school where only disabled children attend. In 1963, that was not the case, but subsequent to 1975, the primary function for South Texas ISD became actually unlawful.
So the appellate makes the argument that if this court is to decide in your favor, that it would lead to further lawsuits from all of them, and they would lose all $30 million, not just your $750. Does that type of analysis play into our ruling?
Those other counties are not before the court. I cannot speculate whether other taxpayers would have the same objection that the Lyford CISD taxpayers do. I'm only here representing Lyford CISD. Those are the only taxpayers before this court.
Would you agree, though, that there would be other taxpayers in the same place as the Lyford Independent School District taxpayers?
I don't know if the South Texas ISD 5 cents tax impacts the other school districts in the same way it does in Lyford. But in Lyford, it has a very real and tangible impact on the school district, and that's why we're here. So you've asked so many questions from my presentation, and I have 3 minutes to fill.
You have no idea where you're at. I fully understand that.
I have 3 minutes to fill. But let me just kind of jump back over some of the issues that we've talked about. I would ask the court to look carefully at Chapter 26 of the Education Code and look at those defined terms. Throughout the appellant's brief, they refer to non-handicapped scholastics as if they were referring to general education population, and that is not accurate. The term is narrowly defined to mean students who are between the ages of 6 and 21, who need an alternative school setting, or who are older than the age at which school attendance is compulsory. That's a very limited subset of students. That is not the subset of student or the student body that's served by South Texas ISD. Alternative school is also a defined term, and it refers specifically to a school setting for students who cannot be trained or educated in the existing public school program. The tax collected by South Texas ISD can only be used for those purposes under Chapter 26, and I think all parties are in agreement that that is not the primary function of South Texas ISD today. Let's see what other point I wanted to revisit. And again, we are not challenging the ability of South Texas ISD to operate. It is, as the court members of the court have mentioned, an excellent and exemplary public school, and it can continue to be so without charging an additional tax on the taxpayers of Lyford CISD. The state has made certain that it won't lose funding if the court grants our case, at least that funding that would put it on a level playing field with all the other school districts in the state.
So we have, go ahead.
Result in the children from that area not being able to attend South Texas ISD?
I don't know. My understanding is that South Texas ISD has an open enrollment policy. That was the testimony at the court, at the hearing, and I have not examined that more.
So someone
thoroughly
from Zapata County who does not pay taxes to South Texas for South Texas ISD could attend.
I don't know the answer to that.
Maybe they do.
You had a question.
Council has 5 minutes remaining. He can answer that.
So I go back to me, the disruption of the government seems to be where I get hung up on in this whole array of things, and I know you're out of time. But I want to take a step back. Whose burden is to establish that this would not be a disruption? Whose burden was it at the hearing to put the evidence? Was it your burden to show that it would not cause a disruption, or was it the school, South Texas Independent School District's burden to show that it would cause a disruption?
I think that's an excellent question. The burden question only came up in an appellate briefing.
As always.
The evidence that was admitted at the hearing showed that South Texas ISD has a very ample fund balance, which would protect it for several years.
Yeah, but I'm trying to figure out how do I look. I know what the evidence was at the hearing, but
okay,
whatever, and I know what the court ruled, which was in your favor. So when I'm looking at it in a de novo review, as this court is looking at it, do we look at it as who carried the burden to show whether it was the disruption, whatever evidence that was? Was it your burden or was it their burden as to decide whether the disruption? Or do we not know the answer to that question?
The question was not raised in any of the pleadings before the trial court.
Okay.
So the only evidence that we offered is that there's a substantial fund balance, which means money that is not needed for current purposes, and that the bonds that had been issued were not secured by property tax. They were secured by lease payments.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to start with that question. Do you believe it was your burden to establish that it would have caused a disruption, or was it their burden to show that it would not have caused a disruption?
No, Your Honor. The burden is always on the plaintiff who is seeking to open the courthouse doors. And you can find that analysis in the Jones versus Turner case that we have repeatedly cited in our briefing. I want to begin by taking a step back. We've heard a lot of political type arguments. You know, South Texas ISD has a lot of money. They're not subject to recapture. But the central issue for taxpayer standing is, can you show an allegation of an illegal expenditure? And to do that, they have to have a basis for illegality. You have to show some prohibition that's being violated by South Texas ISD. You'll notice my opposing counsel never quoted to you what prohibition, either in a statute or the special election order or anywhere else that says we cannot educate non-special education students, or that we cannot use ad valorem tax dollars for those purposes. In fact, there's only authorization in this case. And Your Honors, I know I didn't get to walk through all the bench exhibits, but I would refer you back to tab one. That's our authorization right there. It tells you that we can perform vocational training both for handicapped and non-handicapped scholastics. So rather than being a normal taxpayer standing case where there's a clear prohibition, this is actually a case of authorization where they can't show you a prohibition and yet still want to come and claim taxpayer standing. Now, when we get into this whole debate about, you know, what is the definition of handicapped, what is the definition of non-handicapped, what is the definition of alternative schools, I want to make two points crystal clear for Your Honors. First, we have shifted the debate from whether they're standing and a basis of illegality to whether South Texas ISD's board of directors is exercising its discretion properly. When you shift into that argument about, well, are they actually educating non-handicapped students within the meaning of the statute, you've stopped saying that they're doing something illegal, and what you've started saying is, did the discretion that the board have get exercised correctly? That's exactly what a political question is, and that's why we raise the political question doctrine. That's non-justiciable, because the statute clearly says the board of directors gets to decide what is or is not, you know, a handicapped scholastic or a non-handicapped scholastic within the parameters of the statutory definition. But that's not what they want to do. What they want to do is enjoin the collection of a tax without having a prohibition saying you're using that tax on a certain expenditure and X law or Y law prohibits you from doing that. That's the central failure in the individual appellee's case. I'd also like to turn to this idea about Bland, Your Honor, because you raised it about the disruptive nature, and opposing counsel's response was basically, well, in Bland, you know, the disruption was limited to a certain expenditure. The reason that happened is because the way the plaintiffs pleaded their case in Bland, they're objecting to one expenditure, and the Supreme Court says, well, even for that expenditure, we're not going to give you standing on the basis of being a taxpayer because that would be disruptive. This lawsuit is a lot broader because they're not just objecting to one expenditure. They're essentially objecting to every expenditure. So imagine the scale of disruption in this case as opposed to Bland. That's why Bland is exactly on all fours here.
I understand that. And I think that's why I wrestle a lot with the disruption, because It literally could call for the unfunding of the whole school district. I'm fully aware of it. I'm sure that my colleagues are also fully aware of it. So, but that's where I struggle with. So, but if it is an illegal violating the voter's doctrine, there is no other consequences that is faced by this court.
Well, Your Honor.
But to unfund the school district. So that's the parameters that we're with today. And that's why the evidence of the hearing is so important.
I understand, Your Honor. And I would go back to the fact that the burden is always on the plaintiff to show standing. But let me also say this, Your Honor. Even before we get to the disruption analysis, I'd refer you back to the ex parte City of Corpus Christi case, Your Honor, which is from this court, and Your Honor was on the panel. In that case, this court found there is no violation of the contract with the voters doctrine because what was passed by the voters was broad. There is no prohibition, and as a result, the government had the discretion to to spend the funds in the way it did. That's exactly what's happening here. If you look at the 1974 election order, they want to read in a prohibition, but there is no prohibition. It says what it says about the purposes of building the buildings for handicapped trainees, but it doesn't say, and will never change to educate, you know, there's no prohibition against educating non-special education students.
So what you're saying, because there's no specific prohibition within this language, that it's just broad and they could do anything?
That's exactly right, Your Honor. And that's a natural consequence of not just the Ex parte Corpus Christi case, but also the Barrington case from the 1960s from the Texas Supreme Court. If the proposition that was voted on is broad, there is no prohibition. The government has discretion in the way it exercises its judgment. If there are no further questions, we would ask that the court hold that the appellees have no standing.
Thank you very much for your argument.
Thank
the
you.
Case will be under submission.